Chapter 7. The macrocosm lasts eternally. The macrocosm, the all manifestation, lasts eternally. Phenomena within it may well be subject to change, but this alteration is never a reversion to an initial state. Things do not have to start all over again from the beginning as they do in the world of dialectics. The all manifestation progresses, evolves. Every change that occurs within it is a change for the better, a progression from one step to another, higher, broader one. Only in eternity is there evolution. Underlying this is an unknown divine law, a law of a nature order unfamiliar to us, where the unfoldment of things is not circular, like a wheel turning, but spiral. A law of nature creates an order, a combination of aspects and activities. If we study that order and learn about how the various processes going on within it are interconnected and then comply with its laws, then that order will become alive, active. By complying with its laws, we enter that order, we begin to participate in it, and we leave behind the former system and its laws. From this, it follows that it is possible, in any state of being, to shift immediately from one nature order with its laws to another, and hence to experience eternity in time, existentially, in a fraction of a second. One shifts from the time-spatial to the eternal. And if one does experience this existentially, now for instance, at this moment, then naturally there will be consequences, for every realm has its own phenomena and vehicles. The vehicles of time and space differ from those of eternity. In other words, one can belong to the new realm immediately, but transfiguration, rebirth, must necessarily follow. Transfiguration is possible only when one belongs to a new realm of nature. So what happens is not transfiguration, followed by participation in eternity, but first the formation of a link with the new realm, and afterwards the great transformation. Some knowledge of natural science will help you understand what we mean. If you are with us so far, we can make another point by asking a question. Why are the two realms, the dialectical realm and the kingdom of God, different? Why is the former governed by the law of never-ending return to the point of departure? Why is it bound to a circular course, to the turning of the wheel, while the law of the other realm is progression, continuation, and ascent from power to power and from glory to glory? The obvious answer would be, because in our realm we are separated from the gnosis. But by saying that, we are only describing the result, not the cause. The cause lies partly in the orientation of the consciousness. The way the consciousness is orientated differs in the two realms. Lao Tzu is pointing to this difference when he says that eternity does not live for itself. Hearing that, a person might say, "Oh, I know that. I live for my family, my relatives, my ideals. I am sacrificing myself completely." Such not living for oneself is certainly wonderful and worthy of respect, but still, it is imitation with the animal ego of the mode of consciousness indicated by Lao Tzu. The animal ego is an I-central consciousness. It is a very sophisticated I am, capable of imitating a great deal of beauty, goodness, and love. But that kind of beauty, goodness, and love is only proof of ugliness, evil, and hate. In many respects, this is a rather peculiar situation, because the animal ego very much wants to do good. In many cases, it really does want divine life. The urge towards these things is, as it were, inborn in it. So why doesn't it succeed? Why can't the animal ego convert the time-spatial into the eternal, which is what the occultist believes is possible? The answer is that the animal ego is an organic being. It is an organism. The personality is an organism. You are a vehicular human being as distinct from a divine human being. What is an organic human being? He is a mechanical being governed by a higher intelligence, although he himself possesses a certain organic intelligence. The organic, vehicular human being, the ordinary personality, is able to use energy and act in a human way, or maybe a divine way, because of his imitative ability and because of his origin. Raging around like a madman, he is constantly brought back to his starting point because of the law of his runaway condition. Just as a motor car possesses a mechanical intelligence and, once started, keeps going but can only function correctly when there is a governing intelligence at the wheel, so the personality and its animal intelligence can only serve their purpose if they are under the guidance of the God within, the highest center of life in the heart. If this is not the case, then the organic human being, the vehicular human being, is at the mercy of himself, with all the attendant consequences. It is possible to keep on bringing the organic human being back into manifestation by means of the dialectical reproductive process, but if the true ruler does not take charge, things will keep on going wrong. The human being of nature will be subject to countless degenerations and will follow a road of suffering in a realm to which he nevertheless belongs. The vehicular human being is no longer even a shadow of his former self. The human being of nature thinks he is the true human being and believes he is capable of attaining what is truly human. He pats himself on the chest and says, "I am it. I am doing it. I want it." He is continually imitating and experimenting, yet naturally without any success. If you take the time to examine what we are trying to say, you will find it amply confirmed in the Bible, in the universal doctrine, and in myths, legends, and fairy tales. The vehicular human being had a genesis, a beginning and a fall, a breaking away in self-conceit from his God. The organic human being has but one consuming need to maintain himself. Self-preservation is his biological urge. He lives on death and ruin. The poor wretch has no choice but to do so because he exists. He must live for himself. That is his fate, because he would perish otherwise. He is in danger. He is not being preserved. He is preserving himself because of his nature. And here the curse of paradise comes to mind. There are nations and races who have made this attitude of eat or be eaten into a virtue. If you too think and live in that way, you are on the wrong track. In the beginning, the personality, the vehicular human being, was an instrumentarium, created in order to give the guiding intelligence an opportunity to gather experience, to perfect the all, to serve the gnosis. The guiding intelligence is the true human being, the only God. But the instrumentarium has gone out of control and calls itself man. The vehicular consciousness is derived from a ray of the inner divine consciousness. The true divine human being does not live for himself. He is not a self-preserver. He does not live in danger and has no need to live for himself. He conforms to the laws of a different nature and possesses an eternity consciousness. He is existentially one with the all manifestation, and is sustained by the prana of life. Was it a mistake then when this only God created the personality being? It is pointless to ask, because the personality being exists in any case. There is a God, a true human being, and a personality with a consciousness, with an ego. So what has to happen to the class of dual beings to which you belong? Well, let us suppose that through bitter experience you have become wise, you have become a sage. What must you do now? The sage subordinates himself to the other one, to the only God in him. As a creature, he makes himself subject to the God in him. In total self-surrender, he lets himself sink down into the valley of life. What happens then? He merges with that first one, the superior one, the all-governing one, and enters into glorious tranquility. He detaches himself from his body, his personality. The beast withdraws, and what happens now? The personality, as an instrument, is pre-served. It is transfigured. How? always well, very well, under divine guidance. Perhaps the personality is indeed superfluous, but what will it matter?
You are freed from the wheel. You have returned to your Creator, to your God. You have been raised into eternity. You have said farewell to your animal egoism. And because of that, the interests of the divine man's true being have been advanced. They enter into fulfillment. Thothmes and the Sphinx are united.
If you are willing to accept this understanding of the seventh chapter of the Tao Te Ching, you will see how laughable are the attempts of Chinese scholars to place their own interpretation on Lao Tzu's words, translating them with phrases such as, "Be humble, give way politely, and you are sure to get your own way in the end,"